Can't Quite Put My Finger on It. Written by Alf Gifu. Narrated by Rhea 314. Fandom, Nine World Series by Victoria Goddard, and The Lays of the Hearthfire series by Victoria Goddard. Pairing, Artoran Damara, aka Fitzroy Ankersall, / Cleofer Kip Mdang. Rating, general audiences, no archive warning supply. The morning ritual went as it always had, until the moment that it didn't. Lady Ushuil, the High Priest of the Morning Star, when they dug her out of the wreckage, was very confused about the whole thing. She was in the Imperial Apartments, in one of the larger rooms set aside for those moments when the ritual blessings of Glorious and Illustrious One had greater ceremonial weight and required a greater-than-usual chorus of acolytes and assistants. She was alive, and so were all of those assistants, and so was the Glorious and Illustrious One himself. Although it had to be said that he appeared disconcerted. Lady Ushuil was feeling somewhat disconcerted herself, if she were totally honest. She could not help feeling that there was something different about the Lord Emperor, somehow. He looked past her solemnly, the fabled lion eyes searching the room. He had never been one to express emotion openly. Serene was the standard euphemism. With a slow ripple of his train, he began to glide forward to the door. His eyes twitched round to scan the spell diagram as he went, taking in a full view of the room, their eye stalks both mobile and inexpressive. Something was definitely off. The 2 weeks since the last major blessing had been highly confusing. The blessings had apparently come to a satisfactory conclusion, and at the same time it hadn't. But the guard hadn't been called upon to do anything about it. Everybody had looked at one another blankly, and then gone about their business. Nevertheless, it was impossible to set aside the nagging feeling that something had changed. "Does his radiancy seem different to you?" Sergei asked later in the barracks. Ludwig considered the question. Sergei was his senior, approaching retirement, and not known for his hesitancy.
"I can't say.
Only, it's taken us a lot longer to get around the Imperial Apartments than usual today."
"Yes."
Ludwig thought for a moment. There was, of course, one significant reason why his radiancy might occasionally act in unexpected ways. It was not a matter he wished to discuss with Sergei.
"The new groom of the chamber may have unsettled him. And, of course, he dismissed another secretary this morning."
Sergei nodded. "That could be it, though I always wonder how they can tell. It's always so unexpected when they back out of the room." That had been happening more often in the past couple of weeks. It was strange, the way all these useless scions of the nobility just folded up and retreated from an appointment that should be a highlight of their careers. Konju Onvilius held his brush in a professionally steady hand and continued to add small touches of gold-flecked paint to his radiancy's magnificent carapace. He was not entirely sure if carapace were the correct term. He had learned many technical terms for the growth, shaping, and decoration of human fingernails, and was a little distressed that so few of them appeared to be relevant in his current role. It was an honor to be made Groom of the Chamber, even if he suspected that it had been a promotion born of a desperate lack of available candidates, after his predecessor had, apparently, snapped all their brushes in half and fled the Imperial Apartments weeping several days ago. Nobody seemed to know why. Their exit had given Konju his opening, and he was glad to have it. This was a prestigious appointment, without a doubt, and it was also a challenge such as he had never dreamed of meeting. So many of the materials he was accustomed to were taboo or unwise for his radiancy for one reason or another. Konju had spent several sleepless but instructional nights up with Karavibo's Guide to Garden Creatures and The Care and Feeding of Mighty Mollusks. And he was beginning to feel as though he had grasped the basics. He might even venture to alter some aspects of his radiancy's routine, which did not seem ideally suited to his well-being. He was puzzled by the ignorance of most of the long-serving assistants when it came to the care and support they were called to provide to the Glorious One. When he asked about why things were a certain way, or how things had been done in the past, he quite often received a blank or even pitying look. This was how things had always been. The Odonatha made most of the decisions, and generally spoke for his Radiancy on matters large and small, and the household followed along after them, picking up the pieces. Khonju was determined to do better. His Radiancy was a joy to look after, quiet, receptive, respectful, and patient with all the tedious requirements of decoration and dress. He had never spoken a harsh word in Khonju's hearing. He had never spoken any words in Khonju's hearing, but you could just tell that the words he was not speaking were not harsh. He drooped his eye stalks down over his food when he was particularly enjoying it, which was always rewarding to see, and, although Khonju would never admit this to another living soul, actually rather cute. Cleofer Siotendang had thought he was already keyed up to the highest possible pitch of nerves and excitement when he shyly approached the great door to the Imperial Apartments and asked where to deliver his first morning reports. He was finding, alas, that this had not been the case. Each of the 7 glorious anterooms he entered and passed through before reaching the Emperor's study seemed to wind the tension a notch further on the wheel of his soul. The past 3 secretaries had been rapidly dismissed. It was said that at least one of them had not made it all the way through his obeisances. Cleofer had spent a significant part of the past 24 hours practicing genuflecting and was not at all sure he had it right. This was his last chance. Princess Indrigan was ready to wash her hands of him. Others, such as the Master of Offices, were actively seeking his demise. Making a mistake in formal manners in the Imperial study could be fatal, which was not an encouraging thought for a man who had failed the etiquette portion of the entrance exams to the Imperial Bureaucratic Service 4 times. On the other hand, this was also the greatest honor of his career, to be admitted into the presence of the shining Lord of Rising Stars, to serve the last emperor in person, to bask in the glory of the sun on earth. The guards stamped their spears, the final set of doors swung open. The imperial study was large and lambent with the light of the morning, which glowed through the delicate stonework of the outer walls so that the whole room was brilliant with diffused gold. It was sparsely, even austerely furnished, but every single artifact in the room was an object of dazzling beauty. There were, in this study, 2 guards standing either side of the inner door. There was a gray-robed figure, short and dark and trembling with nerves, perhaps. It was a comfort to see someone else in the room, too. There was also the Lord of 10,000 titles and 5,000 lands. He was sliding along his desk, not facing Cleofer. Cleofer started and almost forgot to drop into his obeisance. He recollected himself just in time and did so. Clumsily, no doubt, but the acolyte stuttered out, "Rise, Siotendang, and take your seat." So it was all right. Cleofer's seat was at the second desk, a smaller and more delicate piece of furniture that was nonetheless twice the size of the tiny workstation he raided in the rooms allocated to a 5th-degree secretary. He sat down, whipped out his inkstone, brush, and paper, ground the ink, mixed it, and was waiting with his brush in his hand by the time the 3rd bell of the morning had died away into silence. His Radiancy continued to ignore him. Cleofer stared at the acolyte. The acolyte stared back, the whites showing around his eyes. Something was wrong. Cleofer had carried the image of the Emperor in his mind from the moment he had first seen a small shining portrait of the young Artoran Damara. He was fairly certain that the Emperor did not have a shell. He sat there, waiting for somebody to let him in on the secret, on the joke. Nothing changed. He considered his options, weighed possible words, wondered if he dared. The Lord of Zunith reached the edge of his desk, the soft gray edge of his foot delicately curling down across the corner of the wood, his small mouthpieces working at the air. Then, with deliberation, he turned and began his stately process back in the other direction. Cleofer looked at the acolyte. "Is it possible," he said, "that the reason His Radiancy has had so much difficulty keeping a secretary is that he appears to be a snail?" The acolyte looked Cleofer full in the face, made a pathetic little mewling sound of confusion and denial, looked at His Radiancy, and then fainted dead away. Cleofer, after some compunction, jumped up to see if the man was all right. He was breathing evenly, and did not appear to have hit his head. He was muttering something anguished about rituals and mollusks, which was probably relevant, but which Cleofer could not make head or tail of. Some instinct inspired Cleofer to look up, just in time to see the lion eyes peek over the edge of the desk. They really were a quite remarkable color, a soft, melting taffy gold that did look something like the eyes of that glorious young emperor in the painting. Cleofer stood slowly, feeling a peculiar ringing in his ears. He was looking into the sun on Earth's eyes. The sun on Earth wibbled his mouthpieces at Cleofer mournfully. "Oh, dear, are you hungry?" The glorious one didn't answer. He was a snail. A very fine specimen of a snail, Cleofer noted, dizzily. Nearly 8 inches long, with a plump and moist beige body and a smart world shell. Someone had diligently gilded the front of the shell and painted a tiny sun in glory at the center point. Cleofer did not fully understand what was happening, but he was here to serve the sun on Earth, and he did have in his pocket the handful of tui tree leaves that he had picked for luck in the garden that morning. Trembling, he fished them out, and dropped them on the table in front of the exalted gastropod before him. It occurred to him a moment or so later, as a wickedly sharp spear point came down to hover just above his chest, that perhaps he should have found a more recently updated etiquette manual for his frantic revision. He stopped in his tracks and let one of the guards bend down over the acolyte. The other guard frowned at him, stepping between him and the imperial desk, though he pulled back the spear. "I'm sorry, Siopendang, but I can't let you approach the glorious one. I think you'd better leave." So, that was it. He'd failed. Cleofer collected his belongings and left, his entire being full of hurt bafflement. He could not help but think that he had perhaps been set up to fail. Nobody had warned him. They had all seemed so surprised when he said the emperor was a snail, too. Perhaps it was taboo to notice. He was miserable enough that he struggled to sleep that night. But that was nothing to the distress he felt when he was disturbed at an early hour the following morning by a hammering on his door and a bark of, "Open up for the Imperial Guard!" "What?" demanded the guard, who had escorted him out of the Imperial apartments that morning. "Were those leaves you fed the glorious one? He's refusing to eat anything else." The terrified pounding of his heart began to subside. "Those were tui leaves, from my tui tree," Cleofer said. "It's a tree I planted, in the gardens. From the Vangavieve, "Show me," said the guard. By the time Cleofer had, and had accompanied him back up to the Imperial apartments, in case he could help, he was beginning to feel much less alarmed. The glorious one accepted the new offering of tui leaves, to the general relief of the acolytes and guards and attendants gathered round. Things got confusing again next, though, because everyone seemed to expect Cleofer to sit down and take dictation. I can't help wondering if the Emperor really needs a secretary," said Cleofer. "His Radiancy has always had a secretary," snapped the groom of the chamber, a small, slightly scary man with intricate Astolondon tattoos. "Why wouldn't he? It's just that he's a snail." The words came out almost as a wail. His Radiancy's existence as a gastropod seemed to Cleofer to be a highly salient fact. The room fell silent. Everybody looked at Cleofer.
"He's what?" said the groom of the chamber in suspicious tones.
"He's a slug with a house on his back. He's a giant Damaran land snail. My sister used to keep them as pets. Look at him. He is a fine specimen of terrestrial pulmonate gastropod mollusk."
The room looked at the emperor, whose eye stalks were drooping in pleasure as he chewed his way through the final tui leaf.
"Now that you mention it," a guard said slowly, "there is something mucusy about his radiancy."
"I don't think I'm the only one who has found the last few weeks unsettling," said another.
"He's unsettling and mucusy because he's a snail," said Cleofer, waving a hand at the desk. He was beginning to think that this might need to be repeated at frequent intervals. There was the short, sharp sound of a dozen people drawing in breath together. Cleofer looked down at the desk, at his radiancy, who had crawled over to investigate, at his hand, which had landed a fraction of an inch from his radiancy's feelers. The glorious gastropod extended a dainty tentacle and poked Cleofer's finger. A brilliant spark flashed against Cleofer's hand, and a flood of illumination roared into his mind, a swirling golden tide. His finger stung as though it had been speared by a needle, and a flush of warmth rolled up from his hand, up his arm pouring into his body. It was accompanied by quite an impressive external flurry of glowing sparks. Feet clattered around him as the rest of the crowd backed hurriedly away. Cleofer opened his mouth to say they needn't worry, that he felt fine, and then the rising tide of heat reached his head, and a small voice cried desperately in his mind,
"Hello? Hello? Can you hear me, Tasty Leaves Man?"
"I can hear you," he breathed.
"Thank the gods. Thank all the gods and the one above," the voice piped. "I was beginning to think I was going to be stuck like this forever."
Cleofer stared at the snail on the imperial desk. Its tiny feelers were waving at him frantically. The voice in his mind was warm, resonant, welcoming. He felt extraordinary, brimming with light, as though some lost and hidden part of his soul had finally been found.
"I'm afraid I may have injected you with hormones," the snail emperor said. "I'm not very good at this body, and, well, I got excited."
This landed with a certain flair, a certain embarrassment, and a certain rue.
"Am I feeling your emotions?"
"Ah, yes. How unexpected, I believe you are. How delightful."
"I'm glad you find it so, your molluscousness? Do you intend to be a snail?"
"No." If the emotion that came with this word had a sound, it would be a kind of mournful piping.
"I have no idea what happened to me. I often don't. I didn't do it on purpose."
"You don't want to stay like this, then?"
"No! You have to help me, Tasty Leaves Man. They are all forgetting what happened."
"How should I go about disenchanting you, your shelfulness?" The snail looked, if possible, abashed. It hastily withdrew the small protrusion that had indeed speared Cleofer's finger.
"Well," it muttered, the words ringing clearly in Cleofer's mind despite the lack of contact. "There's one thing that always works well in the stories."
Cleofer blushed. If he had any doubt which stories the emperor had in mind, the emotion he was sensing now would very definitely have set that doubt to rest. He looked down at his hand. The finger that his radiancy had speared seemed whole, apart from a small irregular patch of gold where the emperor's mucus had come into contact with his skin. He had, many years ago,
seen a portrait of a handsome lord, and known that their fates were intertwined. It felt fitting, somehow, to find Artur and Damara, and find that he had walked into a fairy tale, even if it was not quite the fairy tale that he had expected. Cleofer, Sayo, and Dang leaned down and, before the guards could intervene, he kissed the last emperor of Ostendalis full on his soft brown mouthparts, between the ocular and olfactory tentacles. The emperor's mouth was cool and smooth and somewhat damp. The sense of his emotions in Cleofer's mind melted. Around them, golden sparks erupted. Between them, a fire blazed into life, a burning coal against Cleofer's lips. The sun on Earth wriggled ecstatically, and then, with a gentle whoomph of displaced air, he burst from his shell, the spiral unfurling in a wave of glorious light. The coal cooled beneath Cleofer's lips and softened, and he was no longer leaning over the desk, but standing, even leaning back. A strong arm had seized his waist, dipping him slightly, and Cleofer sighed and sank against it, weak at the knees, because the most beautiful man he had ever seen was kissing him back. Behind him, the groom of the chamber made a strangled squeaking sound. "Oh, gods," he cried. "The emperor was a snail." The end. If you've enjoyed this story, please leave feedback to the author. You can do that at a link to the text through this Podfix post. And if you've enjoyed the Podfic, you're also welcome to leave me feedback. I'd love to hear from you. Thank you for listening.